here it is, Christmas again, when you've had as many as we've had now in chronological life and the life of the Sangha. These children are in single digits, and we're past that. I was having a discussion with one of the little kings, the little princes, who he asked me how I told him that it had to do with my capacity. Well, actually, the actual question was, he's up in the costume closet, and he discovers that there is a huge bin, which is actually a garbage can, filled with toy swords, which is a great discovery for a child. So we reviewed all the swords at great length. Then he asked me why I kept them in a garbage can, and I explained because it was the only thing I could find. They fit in, plus it has wheels, and I'm not as strong as I used to be, and so I can't get it in and out, and the wheels are handy. These are all the problems, you know, that you face when you have a lot of swords. So, but it became a question of why aren't you strong? And I said, well, I'm not as young as I used to be, I'm older. So in that way of small children who to whom we are all such a puzzle, how old are you? Like that. I'm reminded of a little girl and went to visit people in a retirement home, really old lady. How old are you? And the lady said, I'm 92. She said, did you start at one? He asked me how old I was. I asked him how old he was, not quite seven. I said, well, I'm not quite 10 times older than you. And it's just like, where do we put that? I've lived your life 10 times. And it was just marvelous to just really think about that, because on another level, who knows how many incarnations I've had, how many incarnations he's had. Swami's famous answer to the question when a child asked him how old he was, a child of about seven, Swami just said, well, when you were an old woman, I was a little boy. She kind of went like that. And then she got it. She really got the picture. Oh, yeah, so we just keep flipping like this. You're little, I'm big, you're little. I'm old, you're young. You're losing your teeth, your first teeth, and you have all these holes in your head. You know, you're just a little kid, supposedly. I'm an older woman, supposedly. But the more you live out these things, especially on our path, the more lightly you hold it all. That's the only way I can think of to say it. It's still happening, you're still living. I can still be just as enthusiastic about Christmas as I've ever been. Somehow it gives us permission. This morning here with all the children, it just gives us permission to do something that we are sometimes we think we're too sophisticated to do. And I think that's why people love coming. You see how free the children are in entering into it, and suddenly it gives us permission. And of course, Jesus' statement is never far from our minds, be ye therefore like little children. And the reason was because children are so free. And sometimes that freedom works quite against them because they don't have any parameters for what runs through them and become quite inconvenient for their parents and often quite unhappy for themselves. But there's also something about that freedom that's really extraordinary. Many of you have heard me speak of it, so I'll make it brief here. Hare Krishna Ghosh, who is the nephew of Yogananda, had a sister, when Hare Krishna was 15, he was 15 in 1935, when Yogananda went back to America for the 1 year that he spent back to India from America. He went back to India one time for a little over a year, and Hare Krishna was 15, the son of Master's brother Sananda. So he got to be with Master for that 1 year, and he was often with him. And when Hare Krishna was still alive, he would tell us all these wonderful stories about his year with Master. Hare Krishna also had a sister who was 12 years younger, whose name was Shefli. So Shefli was 3 when Master came to India. And she considered, as the whole family does, that Master was the guru, and her one direct contact with Master was when she was 3. She has no conscious memory of it, but the whole family has told her all the stories of her experience with him. And it was a very interesting meditation for me when I was hearing this. And Shefli came and told us the story. It had to be in translation. She didn't speak English. But the story was that she was absolutely in love with Master from the first time she saw him. And nothing inhibited her. That because she was 3, because she was well brought up and profoundly loved and respected as a child, she had this total expectation that whatever she opened herself to would respond to her in kind. So whenever Master would come into the house, as she told the story, she would just race right to him, grab his leg, climb on his lap, and just refuse to be separated from him. And that's one of the stories they tell is that they were all going to the movies, and she was too young to be allowed into the movie, but Master was holding her like this, and she wouldn't be separated from him. So he put on an overcoat and buttoned it over her and smuggled her into the movies. And then she just lay with her head against his heart for the whole time. So two parts of your mind goes two different directions. One is, oh, what a waste. She was only three. And the other is, my goodness, what an opportunity, because she was only three. And her soul was complete, her karma was complete, her chakras, her vrittis, everything was there. The only thing that was undeveloped was her body and her intellect and her capacity to communicate her consciousness and put it in context was limited, but her consciousness wasn't limited. So whatever contact she had with the Master, it was complete contact. And there it was. I love you and I know you love me. And I am never going to be separated from you. Doesn't matter what these people try to do. You know, I know where I belong, you know where I belong, and we're just going to stay here together, aren't we? Like this. Isn't that just extraordinary? And we're so busy with so many reasons why. Karen and I were talking about the Christ child's asleep and the very last lines of that. Why don't you sing it? No, the part about the animals. The animals awake. The animal. We're still not to the right one. Alive to their own worth. That's the. So, all creatures here on earth. All creatures here on earth. No, alive to their own worth, can welcome love and win their release. All creatures here on earth, alive to their own worth, can welcome love and win their release. I mean, I believe one could have continuous philosophical conversations merely by reciting the lyrics of Swami's songs. But think about that. All creatures here on earth, alive to their own worth. What is that about? What is our worth? I mean, think of the long stories that we write. What I look like, what I accomplish, how much money I have, whether I'm a success or failure. Long, long, long lines. But here are these creatures, they know where their worth comes from. Welcome love. And what is it that inhibits us from accepting that love? Always we have a reason. And it usually has to do with whether we're worthy of that love, doesn't it? Alive to their own worth, welcome love, and win their release. That's the end of that song. The Christ has descended. We recognize that we belong to him. And we belong to the Christ consciousness, and we belong to the Master, the Guru, however you want to feel it in your mind. It's just an idea. I mean, it's not the reality of it. It's just however we say it to ourselves that gives us the confidence to open to it. We recognize it, we receive the love, and we're free. As many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. There's so many parts of it. And let us be like Shefley, you know, as soon as God comes, who cares? This is my place. This is where I belong. And that's what gives it to us. It's not, I mean, everything else we do is just in order to get us to the point where we are alive to our own worth and we'll receive that love. Everything else is an exercise to get everything else out of the way. And so when we have opportunities like we had last night, like we had today, where we can just go there because we've all given ourselves permission. We've put on costumes and we're sparkling all over the place and we're singing these songs and it's dark and no one can see you. And it's just, that's what we have. The timing of Christmas set in midwinter for this side of the world, the way it is, they say, you know, historically that it was really the winter solstice that was being, it was a pagan festival and they added Christmas to it and so on. Who knows? Who cares? Because it's perfect anyway. That shift from darkness to light. And I'm sure all of you experience. The older I am, the less I actually sort of really know what time it is and what's happening. But this happens as December progresses. There's this ever growing awareness that it's really dark and it's really cold, and that I look at the clock and it's just much later than it should be for how dark it is, and much earlier than it should be for how dark it is. And it just somehow, even as urbanized as we live, that feeling sort of comes to you. And then somehow you hit that, you hit the solstice. And of course, nothing changes on one day. But every year, when I realize, oh, we've turned. You know, we've gone down as far as we have to go this year. Now we're going to come back up again. And of course, it's such an obvious spiritual image, isn't it? We struggle and we struggle and we struggle, but then suddenly, it may not be that anything has actually happened, but we know it's turned. We can feel that some part of us now understands, and from this point forward, it's all going to be different. And this is why we do this cycle of celebration with so much passion every year. We just do it because we have to take every opportunity we can get. Every opportunity we can get to break out of all of that tiresome being a grown-up. It's just such a drag, really, in the false way. Be therefore like little children. And Christmas brings it out of all of us. And I like the silly parts, too, the partridge and the pear tree and everything like that. Partly just because, why not? You know, just why not? Why not just let ourselves be as we are? Who are we trying to impress? The only one to impress is God. There was a Swami in India. His name was Murk Ananda. I don't know much Sanskrit. Murk apparently means silly. I said, Swami, there's a Sanskrit word for silly? He said, yes. When Swami Kriyananda met Swami Murk Ananda, he said, that doesn't seem like much of a sannyas name. And the man looked at him and said, you don't know me the way I know me, he said. But I've always loved bliss, divine bliss through silliness. And it was his path, it was his way. And perhaps we won't take it as a full name, but it's nice to know that it's even an option, isn't it? And what does that mean to be silly? That means to just forget everything. Just like Shefley. Here comes Master. I belong to him, and I know he wants to be with me. I know he wants to be with me. I'm his favorite. He likes me. And it's true. So happy Christmas, everyone, and congratulations on another marvelous accomplishment, another year. God bless you all.